Welcome to the Healing Trauma Podcast, the Faith Edition, where your healing and faith journey matters. Where faith and trauma-informed healing unite in safety, empathy, and compassion. Now here is your host, Monique Coven.
If you like this podcast and find it a support for your healing journey, consider becoming a friend of the podcast. When you become a friend of the podcast and subscribe, you'll not only support the podcast to keep the healing conversations coming, but you'll also gain access to extended episodes as well as bonus episodes. Thank you for supporting the podcast. Today, I'm going to share with you a conversation that I had with Tricia Lott Williford and her therapist, Jaina Richardson. And they are both the authors of the book, You Are Safe Now, A Survivor's Guide to Listening to Your Gut, Healing from Abuse, and Living in Freedom. And now, on to the episode. Welcome, welcome, Tricia and Jaina.
Thank you so much. Good morning. It's good to be with you.
Good morning.
So good to have you. Just before we recorded, I was telling them that I feel like I know you guys just from reading the book, because your book, You Are Safe Now, has your experience with a relationship and all that entailed. And there was so much, and I felt like I was right there, my heart going with each thing. And then it felt like your therapist, Jaina, was there too. And I was like between you two. And it was very moving, very emotional. So I'm really looking forward to getting into the conversation with both of you. But I want to start with this. So I would like to know, I love your title, of course, You Are Safe Now. I'd like to know why you wrote the book and why you titled it that. And that's a huge question after reading your book.
It's a great question, a great place to start to dive in. So the reason that we wrote this book, and the reason that that is the title, is because those were the words offered to me on the day that I first found freedom from this toxic relationship that was drowning me. I did not realize that the person that I thought that I could trust was actually spinning a web around me, and I was caught and I was trapped and I didn't know how to get out. And when I came to my pastor, who was the person Jaina had been helping me all along, and she was able to see what was going on, because as a professional, she could see things from the beginning. And she had been encouraging me and helping me to see, like, when I came to her, first of all, when I first brought the conversation, I brought it as a confession. I thought I had done something wrong. And she could tell immediately, this was not a consent situation. This was not a complicit situation. This was an abuse, a predatory situation. But a predator who is so skilled in what they've done, and they know what they're doing over and over and over again, absolutely does exactly that. I now know, to snare you into this place of being like, wait, I think I'm part of this now. And so I, after years of working with Jaina to talk about this and heal from this, I went to get a second opinion. And it was when I met with my pastor, because I thought, this wound has happened in a spiritual church context. I need the healing to include a spiritual church context as well. And he sat down with me and asked some very important questions to identify actually what had happened. And once he too was able to see, oh, Tricia, this is not what you have been led to believe that it is, his words were, you are safe now. You are safe now. And he extended a hand to me, physically, but also virtually and spiritually and protectively, to say, this is the way out. By telling us, by telling me, by telling Jaina, you are safe now. And here's how we're going to do this. And so that is, as we wrote the book, that emerged as, oh, this, that's the title. Those are the most powerful words that I received along the journey of, oh, you are safe now. The healing is long and the process is long, but starting today, you are safe. You are safe and you are protected. And I really needed that. And I suspect that there might be some people listening today who also are saying, okay, tell me more. How do I get to a place of being safe now? Tell me what to do.
Yeah. And I'm so floored by your pastor's understanding of
yes.
trauma and the experience. I mean, sadly, I've had a guest on here who had something similar and, you know, it was the opposite kind of response. So the fact, I'm so grateful that you had that and he knew just what to say.
I am abundantly. I mean, that changed the course of my entire life and healing. And what I appreciated also is that he didn't just jump to, oh, this happened to you. You are absolutely, you're safe now. You're good. He asked important probing questions to unveil truth of what had happened, because certainly we shouldn't all be able to just show up for confession and then receive like, okay, absolutely. You've done nothing wrong here. Okay. If I had, I wanted someone to call me out on it. Honestly, Monique, I wanted to do penance. I wanted like, yeah. Tell me how do I get above sea level again? I'm mm-hmm. drowning. How do yeah. I do that? And if there was something that I needed to do, that's why I was bringing it. Like, tell me what I need to do. Tell me what I've done wrong. And so there is a space for asking the questions, but the fact that he navigated it so beautifully and so carefully to identify, oh, this is not a place for victim blame. This is not a place for victim shame. There is never a place for victim blame and shame. And he navigated it in a way that was revolutionary.
I'm hoping that pastors or people in those positions of authority in a religious setting or can hear that, because it's life-changing. And if they don't hear it, if you know a pastor, maybe you can share this this interview, because it can be life-changing. And I think those questions, as you were talking about that, I was thinking those questions are really, they were for him to see, but they were for you, because that's where you were able to see, wait a minute, I'm not the victim here. I'm, like you said, I'm wanting to repent, but actually, wait a minute. I was a victim of someone who had this yes. whole kind of plan, which must have been mind-blowing for you.
Oh my goodness. Absolutely. absolutely mind-blowing. One of the things that I have learned in the process is that healing is a long journey, and it starts with a step that you take right now. And so the step that I took right then was to reach out for help and to get clarity on this situation, get clarity on what had happened. But then I'll tell you what, Monique, it is a whole different process to realize you've been manipulated, to realize you've been deceived, to realize that you got duped. That is another whole layer of like, oh, wait, I need to revisit the last years of my life through this lens of truth of, I only knew what I knew. What did this person have in mind all along? And when you can see that, it's sort of like the sixth yes. sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Haley Joel Osment, when you can look at it at the end and realize, wait a minute, wait, this manipulator had something in mind from the very beginning. Now every interaction has a different tone, has a different color. Every single thing looks different. And once I was able to see that, I mean, that in itself was years of processing to just be like, wait a minute. What I thought was agency on my part, what I thought was me learning how to love messy people well, was actually someone who was targeting me. And that changes everything.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine, but it's like you said, that when that isn't even in your frame of reference, or you're not And then suddenly you realize that I definitely want to hear from Jaina. But what I was thinking is that maybe some of the audience that are listening or go is wondering more about the actual story a little bit. So maybe you can give a little bit of a background on what is this relationship you're talking about?
Yes. Thank you for asking. So many years ago, I joined a Bible study. And in that Bible study, I was surrounded by very smart women. And I was drawn to this conversation because these were women who weren't just getting together to cut coupons and have tea together. Like they were doing real life together, and they were asking important questions, and they were embracing theology and diving deep. And I was very, very fascinated by that. And I was drawn to it as we are drawn to things of great value and things that are beautiful and things that are life-giving. And it was a life-giving space. And there was a core of women inside this that I thought, oh, wow, there's a level of intimacy here that I've never seen before. There is something here that is just like, wow, these women. There was one at the very center, and in the book, her name is Annie. And there was one in the very center, and she was just like a flame that all of us were drawn to, like moths and butterflies. Like, wow, she has this. She seems to have the answers. She had letters after her name, degrees and understanding that seemed just deeper and more aware than the rest of us. And so she was leading and she was teaching. And I too was drawn deeper because I wanted to know more and I wanted to learn and I wanted to be deeper, better. I wanted to make myself a disciple of Jesus Christ. I wanted to learn more. And so I thought I was heading in that direction. And the deeper that I got into my relationship with Annie, the more I began to think, wait, what? This doesn't feel right. This feels a little bit like something else is happening here. Something I can't name it. And as I spoke with Annie about it, she would say, oh, well, let me help you understand. This is the church. This is actually the church in action. In the second chapter of Acts, they write about what it actually looked like for a community to live together, to share everything they had. They didn't need for anything because they shared all of their resources. And what you're seeing here is an intimate community that I've created and I'm fostering so that we can do church the way that it was intended to be done. And I thought, well, that actually sounds like a really beautiful thing. And so I took one more step in my heart in that direction. And I continued on that path along with many other women. And I still just felt an unsettledness in my heart. And as I continued to ask those questions of Annie, she always had an answer. She always had an answer of, oh, what a great question. Yes, absolutely. You should be asking that question. And Trisha, as you lean more into your maturity as a believer and your understanding of Bible knowledge, you'll understand that the questions you're asking are really Old Testament law. And we're called to live in New Testament grace. And you know what, Trisha? What are we called to do more of? Love. We're supposed to love more. Always love more. If we're withholding love from someone, that's not what Jesus asked us to do. We are to love our neighbor as ourselves, love the Lord our God. That is what we're supposed to do. If you're called to love someone, lean into that always. And so she had answers for everything. And then she said, you know what, Trisha, I want to invite you, actually, you ask such good questions that I'd like to invite you into a place deeper still in my life as an accountability partner, because you have a sense of what's going on. You have a sense of layers of things that are invisible, and you have a perception and an intuition that I really feel like it would be wise for me to tap into as a leader. And Trisha, you're a leader. You're becoming a leader. I see it in you. She said, I see it in you. There is something really influential and important about what you have to, about what God has for you. There's an anointing over your life, she said. There's something very beautiful here, and God is doing something great. And so what I think would be valuable for you, Trisha, is for you to have an intercessor. Have someone who's going to pray for you. And why don't we be intercessors for one another? You pray for me, I'll pray for you. And what that means is that We will have absolutely no walls between one another. You will know everything about me. I will know everything about you. We will share all of this, but we won't share our secrets with anyone else. We'll only share them with each other. And so, Tricia, in that process, it would be just a gift to me if you could join me in this journey, but only if you can be authentic about it. So she said, one of the things that's going to be really important is authenticity. And it's going to be really important that you can pray also, Tricia, that you will not judge me. Pray that you will not outcast me. Pray against a spirit of criticism. And when you feel that tug in your heart, that is just, you know, that's the old way. And Jesus calls us to a new way. And so we are called to love, and I'm inviting you into this space of intimate friendship, of accountability, of intercessor prayer. But Tricia, I'm asking you to please not judge me and have an open, gracious mind. And in doing those, Shana will be able to talk much more about this, but in doing those things, she put me in a place of being in a role of entrusted dark secrets. And so you might unpack that more with Jaina later, but what I want to tell your listeners is that I did keep a lot of secrets for her. I kept a lot of secrets for her as her intercessor, as her accountability partner. I continued to ask questions. I continued to pray against judgment. I continued to pray toward grace and restoration. But there was a lot that I learned from being in friendship with her, was that there, there's some stuff going on here. There's some stuff going on here as far as boundaries crossed, we'll say, in this moment. And so I continued. Monique, I just felt like, okay, you know what? If anybody can toe the line, I think I can do that. I think I can do that. I could be with an alcoholic. Like I could be next to an alcoholic without becoming an alcoholic. I can be next to a person who has an addiction, and that doesn't have to become my addiction. So maybe I can do that with this person. Maybe the secrets that she's keeping, I can hold her accountable and pray for those things without it becoming mine. And I could for a long time. And then very tragically, my husband died very suddenly. And I lost my anchor. I lost my partner. I lost my covering. I lost the world as I knew it. In that place of vulnerability, all of my defenses were down. And Annie crossed a line. She crossed a line. And it happened within the week of my husband dying, that some things happened that they're discussed in the book. But it's very tricky for me to talk about, and I wouldn't want to trigger your listeners right now. But that it wasn't until basically all of these terrible things happened, my husband dying and an assault from a person of trust in my life within the first week of me learning how to be a widow. And it was several weeks later that I met Jaina, that I was like, I need help. I gotta figure this out. I do not know what to do. And Jaina became my therapist. And we started the process of grief therapy. And it wasn't until many months later, as pieces were not coming together in my therapy and growth and healing, that I thought, oh, I'm going to have to tell her about this other thing. I got to tell her about this other thing. And as I did to tell her about this, I learned that things would be shifting from grief and trauma recovery to sexual trauma recovery, to betrayal wounds. And so all of that to say, we began a process 13 years ago of dissecting and extricating these two massive crises that happened in my life at the same time. And unwinding those, untying that knot, we spent for a lot of time, she just had me write down anything I could remember, anything I could remember. And I had hundreds of 3x5 cards filled with memories and information. And I would say, but Jaina, I don't remember. And she'd say, it's okay if you don't remember. But I can't, I'm not sure when. It's okay if you write down what you know. Write down what you remember. We'll put a timeline together later. We'll figure this out later. And once throughout the course of over the years, once I was able to see, oh my goodness, these 3x5 cards are an outline of my story. These journal pages show the path to healing. I've written it all. It's all written down. We might need to offer this to the world. There isn't a resource like this. There isn't something between therapist and client. There isn't something between co-authored with someone writing through the trauma and another writing through the treatment. What if we could show people this is how it happens? This is how it happens from beginning to end, from targeting and grooming and the toxicity of a predator all the way to this is how healing, what healing looks like. This is how you can step away. This is how you can be safe now. And so that is how we have landed exactly in this space. That's the story 13 years later, 10 years simply of the process of healing, 3 years of writing the book. And that brings us to today, Monique.
Wow. I know, as you know, as I was reading your story and, you know, Jaina comes in and I'm thinking, she is so blessed to have Jaina. We all want a Jaina. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that God brought the right person for you in this place. So there you are. You came in and she's coming in because she just lost her husband and this is what she's bringing. And I'm curious about, did you sense that there was more?
Great question, Monique. And, you know, every time, it's hard for me at times to hear everyone needs a Jaina. I hear what people are saying by all means. And honestly, I just feel like that's a sacred path that God entrusted me to walk with Tricia and other people that I get to walk with. And so finding somebody that is a good match, because that is the number one piece. If they find someone who is not a good match or isn't a good fit, please keep trying, because there is somebody out there to help. And that would be a good match. And so to walk that journey, and many times I've even shared this with Tricia, there are times I'd be in the session and I'd say something or to someone, another client, and they're like, wow. And I thought, wow, that's really good. I got to write that down. Like, that was totally God. So the journey definitely was a long journey. Tricia worked hard. And yes, when she first came in and she was telling me about her horrific grief and trauma just with the death of her husband, just in and of itself is a trauma. But something was missing. I didn't know what it was, because other pieces weren't fitting. There were other pieces that were happening, and I didn't even know always what it was, because I couldn't put my finger on it until the day on our walk, when she shared, hey, I got to share this with you. And I thought, there it is. That's what we're missing in order to get a full healing in this process. So we had to make sure we dissected, because that's a complex trauma when you have trauma upon trauma, and had to start working, making sure we were dealing with the grief, but it was intermixed. So we had to start untangling it. And like Tricia said, if you know Tricia, she loves the organization and the index cards. So we did those. They were even color coordinated. And started just saying, write down what you're remembering. Like she said, we don't have to have all the information in order for us to get a picture. And it started to unfold. The line started to unfold and the timeline and what happened. So yes, I thought something else is happening, and I just wasn't sure what it was until she was able to reveal it. And she, you know, as she went to Tricia, as you went to the pastor, she was like, okay, I need to be punished. There was that feeling, because there's so much shame connected into it. And we had to dissect and implement ways to cope with that as well. The victim shaming is huge in scenarios when someone has been the victim.
And one of the things, I'm sorry, Jane, if you don't mind, I just was thinking also, Monique, about the fact that once we had identified, okay, these are two major traumas, once she had helped me to see, like, there's actually two things here that have created this giant thing. Then I was like, okay, take it out then. Can you just remove this tumor from my soul? Can you just take it out? And that's what I wanted. Like, what is the fast forward button? Mm-hmm. How do we get this out of my life? And someone said to me recently, we talked about how it was tied in this knot. And I don't know if you've ever had a delicate necklace that's been tied into a knot, and it's so hard. It's so it's so fine that the thread of the gold in there is just like it. And you get so frustrated. And there's part of me, someone said this week that was so helpful. They said, I have felt in that place like I'd rather break it than fix it.
Yeah, such a good analogy.
Right? Yes. And that was how I felt. Like, just break it. Just break it. Just cut it out, whatever needs to be taken away. Mm-hmm. Just get rid of it. And Jaina, can you speak to the fact that it's a long process for, like, it can't happen that way.
And even why it can't happen that way. Like, why can't we just break it out? Why can't we just, like, I don't know, you know, they say, I used to think, I want to get hypnotized, and then they remove it before I knew anything.
A lobotomy is another one people have said to me, and I'm like, nope, we're not doing that. That is a great question. And many times people will come in, and I said, if I had that magic wand, I've been looking for it for 32 years of doing this, I would have waved it. But that is not how we're made. That is not how we are able to cope. And that is not what can happen, unfortunately. And I many times have people say, okay, give me a timeline. Everyone's different. God made us all different. So that's not realistic. The process, though, does take time because it is delicate. And yes, in that process, I'm having to say, no, stick with me. We've got this. We can do this. You've got this. God has you. But if I jumped into, for instance, EMDR right away, she wasn't ready for it. And I would have done more damage than help. And that's hard when you just want the pain to go away. You just want it better. Like, can I just move on and move forward? And unfortunately, that isn't realistic to what we are capable of doing.
Can I just stop you for a second? Because I know lots of people have done that, where they're like, they go to an EMDR therapist with their pain, and they're like, let's do it already. Why couldn't you just start doing EMDR with her?
So in reality, there is a lot of work that you do, preface work beforehand. And if I don't have that intact and we put her into the trauma and EMDR, she is not going to be able to ground well. She is not going to be able to step back into the world as well as I would be held accountable to. I don't think it's, I don't think it's right. That's me. And I'm not speaking for others other than I don't think it's healthy. So in reality, I needed her to find ways to, first of all, to dissect it, to have an understanding, identify what am I dealing with, so that she could have some empowerment in just that. In
the naming, when you were talking about the naming, I was like, it's betrayal, perpetrator,
victim, all of it.
Yeah.
Grooming, they have to identify and know what that is. Because it's going to come up. And if you don't have that identified, they're not going to be able to cope down here when they're in the middle of the emotions that come with the trauma. So you have to have that. You have to be able to ground them. They have to have a safe place. They have to, there's a whole formula. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, again, I'm having them in the session, they're going through EMDR, they're reliving some of it. And then I'm going to put them out in the world and good luck. That's unacceptable. Yeah. For me. So it's not healthy. So the process does take time. And there are times just the prep work can take over a year to 2 years. And you'll see that in some of the studies, because we want to be safe with people.
Yes.
I'm not here just to say, here's seven, here's brief, and you're done. That's not healthy. And I will not do that. I will not put them in harm's way. Absolutely not.
Yeah.
You're going to betray again after they've already been betrayed. Absolutely. Yeah,
I think that was really just an important piece, because there is, I think, a misconception around trauma recovery. And I think that sometimes you'll hear people trying to do this program and then, or you just need this and you'll be fine. And I'm glad that you stressed the importance of taking your time. And I know you go more into in the book, it's really laid out. Yeah.
And everyone, it's specific to each person, right? Maybe someone takes longer. Maybe someone takes a little bit shorter, but it is not because we're rushing through it. It's because where is that person? Are they prepped and prepared in order to work through it?
Yeah. I would love to know your, when you started to, like the process of when you went and you started to show her or name for her some of these things, like we were saying, going from, I feel so guilty, I've done something wrong, to wait a second. Like, do you want to share a little bit about that process? And you talked about also the shame and the victim blaming.
Yeah. So the victim blaming, it's very, you know, what has happened many times is the person who's done the grooming has been masterful in making the victim the problem and shaming them and blaming them. Well, maybe if you hadn't done this, that wouldn't have happened. We hear that all the time in our world, correct? Mm-hmm. So there has been so much that has happened prior to getting someone who is coming to me often and saying, hey, this has happened, that we have to then dissect that. We have to look and literally go to the beginning. So we go to the beginning. We talk about scenarios that have happened. They'll tell me the story and I'll stop. You know, Tricia, we would stop and I'd say, let's say that to me again. And then there are times I may say, if someone came to you and said that, what would you say to them?
I'm laughing because I remember exactly this process. And as she's saying, I mean, part of being a victim of someone who manipulates your mind and your spirit is they've been telling you what to think. And they've been telling you, they've been feeding you information like morsels of food that was actually poison until it became something that occupies your thoughts. And so I would bring this to Jaina and say, well, here's what must be true. Now, if she had simply come back to me and said, no, that's not true, here's what's true, I wouldn't have known how to process that information because I no longer had my instinct for truth. I didn't have that anchor anymore. It was gone. And so instead she would say, oh, interesting that you would say that. Say that again. Oh, okay. So if someone brought that to you, how would you respond? Oh my gosh, I'm horrified. I can't believe someone, that's how you would feel if you were stepping outside of your own story. Mm-hmm. And Jaina has this thing that she does. She would allow me the time that I needed to be able to identify what, like, I think that she knew, like, okay, I need to help her understand and discover this on her own. So that, I mean, I'm a teacher, and that's part of the process, is to help the person who's learning to own what they know. And so all of a sudden I would have like this wow breakthrough moment that maybe took weeks to arrive at, maybe took months to arrive at, maybe took years. And all of a sudden I'd be like, oh, wait, there's a word for this. And she would, she winked. She has a wink, a Jaina wink. That's like, I can watch her. I know from watching her that she's like, there it is. There it is. Okay. That's a piece of the armor that's in place now. Okay. Now we can move to the next step.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it is a step, and the person has to get there by themselves. It's kind of like we often think about kids at times, when you want them to understand something, sometimes they have to go through pieces or work through it until they go ding, 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 because then it becomes real. Then it's theirs to own.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
And it empowers like you were... them, like she said.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like trauma recovery. It's making me think of, you know, we've often said how with trauma, you know, you can't just like think your way out of, you have to experience safety. You can't just say, I'm safe, I'm safe, I'm safe. And that's exactly what you're saying. You're helping her to like get that aha inside her body so that it changes, not just, you know, he was a perpetrator or whatever. It's right. You feel, oh, he was a perpetrator, and it just sort of changes your experience and you get it. So, right. Wow.
So Tricia had talked about the secrets, Wayne Mullen talks about the secrets. There are four different secrets. And this is important because this is just another way. I mean, as she explained her story, I would say, oh, the secrets. Oh, the Christianese. Oh, friendship. Oh, meeting this, you know, want or need or fulfilling. So there are all these pieces. And in that process, at times, and I'll go over the secrets, but in that process, I also want to address the piece of there would be these moments, Tricia would say, I feel uncomfortable. But then what happens is the perpetrator is masterful at then saying, let's regulate you. Let's make this okay. Let's make something else okay and make it feel okay. And then we descend, you know, we work on, here's another issue that may cause you to be anxious or worried or feel like something's wrong, that feeling. And then, well, but look at this. And it regulates you again. So it is like this roller coaster, which causes the desensitization, which causes you not to keep your internal like alert up, because you're on this continual roller coaster. So the secrets is one of them. They had, you know, he talks about a free secret, which is maybe gossiping, and it's you're sharing information there, but you don't share it with everybody. The other one is the entrusted secret. So I'm just doing an overview. We get into more details in the book. Entrusted is actually like a psychologist, a therapist, a doctor. It's confidentiality. Like we have to do that. Like I, you know, don't go share everything about anyone I've talked to. I can't. So that's, there's a healthiness to that piece of it. We have an inside secret, like maybe someone's planning a birthday party for a friend. So keep it. But the fourth one is the dark secret, that if something is concealed, if it's only because if it is revealed, things are going to happen. People are going to be damaged. Organizations are going to fall. And that's what was happening. It was a dark secret that Tricia was holding, many dark secrets, actually. Mm-hmm. And she thought, I can do this. You know, she trusts me, and I want to be an intercessor, and I'm here, like, I want to be a good Christian. I want to feel like I'm helping. I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to look at, you know, I don't want to think poorly, which is another toxic empathy, which we see a lot, definitely in the church. All of those together is this, and other things that we'll mention in the book, but that brings about, I'm going to hold your secret. I can do this. I'm here. God will use me.
And one of the things that I now know is that when you're holding that kind of information, when you're holding a dark secret on behalf of someone in a person of trust or a position of trust and a position of power and a position of influence, to any degree, there comes a place where you have a choice. Are you going to betray this person by sharing their secret, or are you going to betray yourself by keeping the secret? And that's what the choice, that's what it comes down to. That's what it feels like in the end is, if I tell anyone, then I'm betraying the promise that I made to this person. So I'll just keep it a secret. Well, in keeping it a secret, I am betraying my body. I am betraying my soul. I'm betraying my own integrity. I am, and given the choice between hurting someone else or hurting myself, that's a bad choice. Those are bad choices. Those are bad choices. But I, probably like you, are also, I'm going to choose like, hey, I'll take the hit. And before we know it, that becomes a pattern of codependency. It's no longer about sacrifice. It is a pattern of destruction, when you're wounding yourself repeatedly and staying in a negative pattern so that you can stay in relationship with someone. That is the danger zone. That gets really dark really fast.
Mm. Which is why it's important to identify the safe people in our life. You know, she had this tug of war, and we had to start looking at who are safe people. What does that look like? Those are people that are helpful and nurturing and help you with your talents and abilities. And your unsafe people isolate. They, you keep secrets. You don't have healthy other healthy people around you to talk about things, because now if you did, again, a betrayal can happen. So it's helping people identify who are safe people and who are unsafe people in our life.
That's a really big one, because a lot of people, especially if you've had trauma, they don't necessarily know what, you know, safe people are, especially if they've been brought up in homes where the norm was a certain way. So they go into the world thinking this is what it is. And so that must be a big piece of the work. Was it when she talked about that with you, about what safe people are, was that, what was that like for you to hear that, to know that?
We had to work. Yeah, go ahead.
My first instinct is, oh, my world's going to get really small. My world is going to get really small, because not only did I need to identify who wasn't safe, but I also needed to extricate myself from the people who were connected to the unsafe people. Mm-hmm. So it's a network. It's a network. And I needed, in order to be safe, I needed to be able to say, well, this person feels like a safe person, but they're connected to Annie. Oh, then I have to step away from that relationship too. Well, this person, I mean, and we had to look at each friendship of my life, and to establish, even if that person is not harmful to me, if they are in relationship with the person who is harmful to me, then I'm only 2 degrees removed from my predator. Mm-hmm. And I need much more margin in my life in order to proceed carefully. So that was the piece of that was shocking to me, was how small my world was going to get, and actually how comfortable it became in that space. When you can be in a room, even if you're by yourself, but you know that you're safe in that space, I'd rather be there. I'd rather be there than be in a room with 200 people that I don't know where to step, because I don't know where the landmines are. I'd rather be still and be quiet and know that I am safe and I am healthy, rather than proceeding down a path where I think, well, I don't know who I can trust, but let's just keep the momentum going because we're already going so fast. It seems like we're committed. There's got to be a finish line in place. That finish line might be a cliff, actually. We might be headed right over the edge. Mm-hmm. And so I needed my world to get real small for a while.
And one of the ways we did that, one of my, you know, just umbrella tools is a bullseye. And we will write, I just have people write who are safe or who are your innermost people. And some people come in with 10 rings and some just 3. But what we did for Tricia was we then would identify, why is that person there? Sometimes we put people in places because we've known them forever. Sometimes we do it because they have titles, family members, or their spiritual leader or whatnot. And so then we start to dissect, why are they there? Is that healthy? What are they doing for you? And should they be there? So that's part of another way we start to identify safe people, unsafe people. It's just a quick little tool, and literally, I just say, write it. Don't ask why right now, because then they'll overthink. I just need to put people where you just put them. Oh, well, I talk to them all the time and share things. And then she would bring it in, and I have people bring it in, and then we start the dissection. I have lots of questions I ask and help them identify what's the purpose of that person in their life in a healthy way. What has not been healthy, or why are they there, and what do they do, and what would you trust them with, and why would you trust? I mean, there's so many questions we ask, and that
is
a
so good
way of helping her.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say one thing, was that at the beginning of your, you know, friendship, I noticed you had sort of natural, you know, we have that instinct inside of us, that alert that's like, something doesn't feel right, not sure what it is. And I mean, it was so clear throughout the book how it was just being sensitized, you know, and
silenced.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And so, it's a process of getting that back as you feel safer, seeing that it's always there,
yes.
Just silenced, right?
Yes. Here's what I learned is that as Jaina helped me to hear that voice again and to understand my instinct and to understand my relationship with the Holy Spirit, who is the one who is ultimately safe, as she trained me again and equipped me to hear that voice, one of the things that I learned is, oh, so I can know that and be still. I don't have to know that and move forward into the next thing that I'm supposed to do. I can listen to that instinct that says, something is safe or something is not safe. I can simply have that information without taking action for or against. I can simply just know. I can simply just know. And as I take another step, as I gather more information, as I have another choice or another decision to make, I can file that into the place of my mind of, okay, that does sit right. I do know the sound of my instincts. I do know the sound of my voice. I do know the sound. Okay, everything about this, this feels right. And I now have a council of people, a team of people that are in my safe bullseye, people with whom I can say, okay, here's all the facts that I have. Before I make this decision, I'm going to run it through your filter also. I think this is right. Would you affirm this? Do you affirm this? What questions and concerns do you have before I take a step in this direction? And in that process, I learned to trust myself again. I learned how to have safeguards and guardrails around me so that the thing about it, Monique, I'm sure that I imagine you've experienced is that once you become aware of toxic and manipulative behaviors, you can smell it from across the room.
Yep.
You can see it. You can see it. And that is such a great guardrail. And I think it's a great guardrail. It keeps you from getting drawn into this cesspool because you can see it and you can smell it. And sadly, I've lived through that and had to survive those deep, dark waters in order to acquire that skill. And the reason that we want this book out into the world is so that we can equip other people with that same sensitivity and that same awareness and that same sense of scent of like, ooh, no, that, you know what? I've heard of this. I read about this somewhere. I heard this on a podcast. And Dr. Henry Cloud calls that herd immunity against dysfunction. And I love that word choice of like, I don't have to get sick in order to be immune to the illness. Mm-hmm. I can learn from it. I can have this information. I can acquire this from someone else's experience. And that can keep me from actually having to be taken down by this personal attack. I'll be able to see it coming. And that's the beauty of what we've been able to offer here is that process of, oh, wait, 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 wait. Someone else told me about this happening. I don't have to go there myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm even going to say, because I was telling her before that, I was somehow thought that, okay, but these things can't really happen in a spiritual community. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. I've met so many people. And so even that, knowing that, mm-hmm. yes, this can happen in a place that you think is safe and trustworthy because it's faith-based, that you still need to have those guards in place, because what I've seen is that there are sadly perpetrators everywhere, narcissists everywhere, so I think it's a really, really, it's a great, great book for yourself. And even those skills are just applicable for life. So I think it's going to really help a lot of people.
That is exactly the prayer. And one of the things that's been interesting in the last many years, as Jaina and I have started talking about it, there's been really a polarized response. One response is, wow, that's what a unique situation you were in, Trisha. That's really a niche. Like, how interesting that you would write a book about that. That's I don't think that's happened to very many people. Wow, I hope you're able to tap into the audience of people who it's just, wow, not very many people have this happen to them. The polarized opposite response has been people who have said to me privately, wait, okay, can you tell me more? Wait, me too. Wait, that happened. Okay, I thought I was the only person. Okay, wait. And the beauty of this is that the principles that Jaina has woven into the book are applicable not just to my story, but as you said, they are life skills. They are a toolbox that that anyone can apply. Not only if you are a person, well, here's ultimately what the bottom line is that together we've written this book for people who are recovering from this kind of trauma. We've written this book for people who are treating those who are recovering from this kind of trauma, for the people who aspire to help others, who are like, I need to know, I have someone in my office. Let me hear someone else's story as a licensed clinical therapist. How did they handle this? And my joy has been to, you know, with my authority of saying, I'm going to open the door of my own process. Jaina couldn't do that. She couldn't do that on... She couldn't say, yep, here's how we did it. But I can do that. I can say, here's my story. Let me introduce you to the person who helped me shine a light out of the cave. And so the second is for other therapists and specialists who are treating people who are recovering from this. And the third is for anyone who loves someone who is recovering from something like this. And really, when we consider that, either the victims and survivors, the professionals who help them, or the people who love them, that consumes really all of us. All of us. Every single one of us knows somebody who needs to be loved and cared for and shepherded through this. And it's possible that you might become the person who someone's going to say this to for the first time. It could be that you'll be the person that someone's going to say, I have to tell somebody. I have to tell somebody what happened to me. And the trust of being in that position, that is a sacred, holy, dangerous place. Because as you said, Monique, if my pastor had received that information without trauma protocol, without trauma education, without a trauma-informed approach, that it would have been disastrous. And that's one of the keys of this book also, is to be able to equip you as an individual, whether you are a parent or a spouse or a colleague or a friend who's saying, oh, someone has done this to you. Okay, here's how, okay, you're safe now. You are safe now. You are safe now.
I also, and I'm saying this from personal experience, just somebody that I'm friends with, something happened somewhere. And I'm thinking that this book needs to go not only to pastors to read, but if you've got youth pastors or youth leaders, where these kinds of situations can happen between a teenager and a youth leader, you need to get the book. You need to be educated. It's the right thing to do, is to be educated, because these things happen in all places and in all forms. So I'm so glad, Tricia, because you know what? It is, you took something really horrible and ugly, and then you were willing to use it for good and for help. And you were willing to put yourself out there. And, you know, I'm so grateful for you to do, you know, for doing that, and for you to be with her. Like, what a gift you've done. I'm going to say it again. We all want a Jaina, but hey, I'm really grateful for the book and grateful that we had this conversation. Before we close, is there anything we haven't touched on that you feel I want to bring that forward just before we close?
I think for me as a therapist, what I want people to know and your listeners to know is, you can get help. There is help. And even if the scenario, again, I want to emphasize, not just like Tricia's, there, the tools and the things we talk about, those are universal tools that can be used and help and give you ideas and some direction to know that you are worth it. You matter. And please, there is someone out there that can help you and take that step. And just even reading the book will give you helpful steps and tools. And hopefully you can go and chat with somebody about that as well. But you are worth it. You matter, is what I want people to know.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I'm already sending this book to a few people, so.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I think what I would also say is to the listener right now who feels like this is overwhelming, that this is, this may indeed be the worst thing ever. It may indeed, the season that you're in, it may indeed be the worst thing ever. And what I'd like to say to you right now is it won't always feel this way.
Thank you for that.
Well stated, Trish.
Mm-hmm.